Or am I reading music into every word? Suddenly the setting is strange. I can see water and moonlight beaming, silver waves that break on some undiscovered shore. Then suddenly I see it all change. Long winter night with the candles gleaming, through it all your face that I adore. You smile and the angels sing, and though it's just a gentle murmur at the start, we kiss and the angels sing and leave their music ringing in my heart.
You have been listening to the Treasure Chest of Big Band Music featuring your host, Beth. Following, we will have the journal with Jay. And just to give Jay another congratulations on his new grandchild born this morning. And so the journal is starting a new time today. It's starting at 1 o'clock from 1 to 2, normally heard in the past from 10 to 11. Treasure Chest, a big band, will be heard from 10 to 1 o'clock, starting off with a little bit of the old big band, and then we kind of move on down the line and get different treasures and different songs. Going out with Barry Manilow and coming up with an old classic, Dinah Washington. You are listening to Making Waves, Dearborn, WHFR 89.3. We're going out with Dinah Washington. The selections you hear will be Pacific Coast Blues, Embraceable Youth, and Blow Top Blues.
Yes, I'm just a fugitive from slumber. Can't count 1 hour that I've slept. I'm just as blue as the Pacific, and I know my eyes are just as wet. Yes, I thought you loved me, baby, but I guess I didn't.
This is WHFR Dearborn, live from the studios at Henry Ford Community College, our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal, at our new time, 1 to 2 p.m. To all our new listeners, we are local news and views, and I do mean local. Stay tuned. Here we are, new WHFR Journal. For our new listeners, you should know that this is the WHFR special public affairs show that we do regularly every Friday, now at our new time. The first time in 18 years we changed the time, but here we are from 1 to 2 p.m., and we talk about Dearborn and the surrounding area and the news that, well, should matter to you most and really does, what's going on right next door in Dearborn and surrounding area. I'm joined in the studio today by two co-hosts, Susan Morell, who is our news director. Good morning. Good afternoon, Susan. I have to start saying good afternoon in the show now. How are you doing?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hang on. We can't hear you. Now we can hear you.
Good afternoon.
Yes, there she is. And Kristen Risbeck, who is in the studios with us too today. And
yeah, I've been missing in action for a while.
Oh, no, I wouldn't want to say that. I'm sure you've been in action,
just not here on the
journal. Not around here. Very busy with your family and your new business enterprise.
Yeah,
yes. Plug your newspaper, if you will, right now for
All
a
right,
second.
All right, sure. Yeah, I'd love to. I started this publication called Behind the Scenes Media here in Metro Detroit, and 10,000 publications are spread all throughout the southeastern Michigan area, mostly Metro Detroit, but we do have some that go a little further. And it's basically anything and everything that has to do with the behind-the-scenes industry of media and entertainment. You would turn to this publication for your next resource or opportunity, you know, educational advice, even just like audition advice if you were going out. I never thought about doing that in audition, something like that.
The people that want to get into the business. And there's a lot of different media careers and businesses in the Detroit
many.
Area.
Yeah. And people just aren't aware of that. They don't realize what an awesome industry that Michigan has.
Where can they find this paper?
It's called Behind the Scenes
Behind
Media.
Behind the Scenes Media.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Behind the Scenes. I was copyrighted. So had to go with another little word there at the end.
Sure, okay.
If they go to the website, which is behindthescenesmedia.com, they can hit the distribution list link and see everywhere that it's distributed. So throughout, and it's bi-monthly, so the next issue comes out for January, February.
And what's the cost?
The publication itself is free.
That's why we can plug it, folks. Okay,
yes,
it may
it's
be
free.
A private profit thing, at
it's
least
a,
she hopes anyway.
It's basically a service to the media and entertainment industry.
Yes, yes, it's a good price. And they can find it where, typically?
A lot of places in downtown Detroit, just the different college campuses like Wayne State. You can find them here at Henry Ford Community College.
Yep.
You can find them in different restaurants, bars, and actually I'm very excited about this. Is a lot of high schools are contacting me. I was in contact with them for their students and their resources, because this is a family-friendly publication. We all know that a lot of free publications out there tend to be a little bit risque sometimes, and this one has no content or advertisement that's not allowed in this publication. So,
no dating ads.
DWM seeks all that good stuff. Yeah,
okay.
That's not,
so it's family
that's all
friendly.
Not in there. It's very family friendly.
BehindTheScenesMedia.com, folks. And Kristen, we hope you can get back to maybe hosting another Choral Arts show on a regular basis. But
yeah,
we know you're very busy with this enterprise. And have you been performing at all vocally?
No, this publication really has taken every little ounce of time I can seem to manufacture out of thin air.
Well, we appreciate.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting really good at that.
Teach me how to do that.
I'm gonna have some lessons.
We really appreciate your voice as part of the new WHFR Journal, and if this new time is at all good for you, we will have you take your turn here. And Kristen is also I think she's very much involved with the community, and I'd even say that she's an activist.
Yes.
She knows
I like
that
to think I am.
If you express yourself to even the current administration and you have needs and things that are good for the community, that you can actually get a response and you can get things done. And it does happen for a lot of people, maybe not those listening to this show, although maybe at this time there's some folks that think, oh, you can never change anything.
Right.
Not true, especially if it's local and it really does hit you and concern you on a daily basis. There are ways of getting things to happen.
I would actually like to make a comment about that, if you don't mind.
Oh.
A lot of people are intimidated by, in quotation marks, the city. It's a misnomer out there that the city is a separate entity from us that, does their own thing. And we are the city. We are in control of what goes on here as residents of the city of Dearborn or whatever city you're in that you're listening to right now. And they're there to serve you, the city council, the mayor. They want your help. They want your advice. They want your input. If they don't, then they shouldn't be there. Because they're there representing you. So with that being said, don't be afraid to go to city council meetings and write letters
or
email if they have, or call them.
Phone
calls.
Exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, it does work. Sometimes you might need a couple phone calls or need to put something in writing
at
times.
They are busy. There's lots of things going on.
Yeah, it's understandable that that things have to be dealt with in their priority and in order of contact, too. But absolutely, I know certainly Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. and the other elected officials that they all have espoused the fact that they're available. They're there to serve. That's why you elect them, representative democracy. But they can't represent you well if they don't know what your issues are. And so that's always, they can guess, but maybe if they knew, they could do a better job.
You should also always try, the proper chain of command, too. Like, if you're having an issue with the rec center or something like that, don't immediately call up Jack O'Reilly and be like, hey, his office and this and that.
Sure.
Talk to the Department of Recreation first, And then if you're unsatisfied with that, you can move on.
We're going to move on here on the show to a number of individual stories that we've looked at from the Dearborn Times-Herald and the Dearborn Press and Guide, our two core newspapers. So we do often stories about other areas around the community, too, some of which are covered in the Times-Herald, Press and Guide in their Sunday editions, even, which expand beyond any nearby boundaries into slightly further away boundaries. Just wanted to mention that my name is Jay Kornick. If I didn't say that before, it's hard to remember. My only daughter gave birth to her first child early this morning.
Yay!
And she is doing well, and her daughter, April, her new daughter, April, is doing very fine, too. And she's a Dearborn resident, so that's why we got to mention it. There's going to be another Dearborn resident who might vote someday and pay taxes and that now, and the city's happy about that. So we're going to go to our first story of the day, your choice, Susan Morrell. What do you think is important that we should share?
Well, the legislature, as we know in Michigan, and as we've discussed here at length on WHFR for months and months and months, has been struggling with the budget. And they were under widespread pressure to repeal a tax on services that was going to go in effect this past Saturday. And so they repealed it. They wanted to do it before it became law, but they didn't make the deadline. So it became law, and the lawmakers said businesses could just ignore it. So that makes a lot of sense. But anyway, Democratic House Speaker Andy Dillon, who represents North Dearborn Heights, which is the city that I reside in, said he made a take-it-or-leave-it offer because he was tired of having every legislative disagreement take until the last possible moment to resolve, and he didn't want businesses to remain in limbo until Friday night. But he made a take-it-or-leave-it deal. They repealed the service tax, and they're going to replace it with revenue from a surcharge on the new Michigan business tax, which takes effect January 1st. And I don't know if that will affect Kristen with your business, but it will affect some businesses. But the legislature has been waiting until the middle of the night to pass their botched budget business deal, and now they wait until the last minute to fix the mess that they created with the service tax, on services.
Is that your choice of adjectives there or adverbs, botched? Is that your opinion or Andy Dillon's?
This is the statement from the Press and Guide. Yeah, and this is Andy.
Is it their editorial?
Andy Dillon. No, it's not really an editorial, but it says that he is upset with the process.
He's the
House Speaker, and they got the job done, but Andy Dillon is very disgusted with the process, that it has been drawn out and out and out, and I don't think it's still completely resolved at this point.
My understanding is they still have, since they repealed the business services tax, a tax on business services like haircuts and other people that provide services, and they thought that was some way they could make money, but there was all kinds of inequities and unfairness about that. And so they repealed that after, I understand, Michigan businesses spent about $1 million collectively trying to retool their cash registers and, add in the tax, and now they didn't need to do it. So they have changed to a different kind of business tax, but they still have a couple $100 million to make up for, because when they got rid of the big business services tax, they still have a deficit they have to figure out how to handle. And so that's where we get into trouble here. I don't know what the answer is, except what we said before. The collaborative style of our legislators has to be improved because they basically don't have any. It seems to be very partisan.
Right.
Dems versus Republicans. Republicans want to make the Democrats look bad, and of course the Democrats want to make the Republicans look bad. And Republicans still in Michigan control in terms of votes the Senate, and so they can effectively keep anything Democratic from going past, and the Democrats can kill anything in the House to keep. So, but it shouldn't be Dem and Republicans. It should be what's good for the state. And it doesn't seem to be primary in anyone's mind, which is really too bad. And Governor Granholm, being term limited, I mean, in a way, she's what they call a lame duck, and just means that she has less power, like George W. Bush. Thank goodness. No, I'm sorry.
Those opinions expressed here on WHFR are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College or WHFR themselves. They are strictly of Jay Koronek, Susan Morrell, Kristen Risbex.
Yes.
Although we hope someone might agree a little bit. But no, the simple fact is that President Bush right now is a lame duck. He has less power because he can't reward or punish anyone after he's out of office. Now, he still has, of course, slightly more than a year to go before someone else will take over as president. But the same problem with Jennifer Granholm, who, of course, is going to be not able to run again because that's the way we've set up term limits in the state.
Right, but Jay, you've mentioned that the political process in Lansing, it takes them so long to learn and learn the job, but if they defy every single deadline, if they miss every single deadline, it sounds to me like they're not efficiently doing the job.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And since when has politics been about efficiency?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but they should be. And this is what voters are getting voters are very annoyed at this point.
And there's not going to be, unless people begin petition drives, the several changes that might make a difference in the legislature that would resolve this bickering and maybe just general incompetence, because if you don't know the system, if you haven't made the connections, if you aren't able to not be a lame duck, in other words, you could get reelected and therefore people should listen to what you say more. If you're a lame duck and you're going to be out of there anyway, people say, well, I don't care what you say. You're going to be gone in 6 months or a year, and I don't have to listen to you. Because you don't have any, there's no consequences to my, which is a bad idea, because maybe there's something valuable in what the person is saying. But, so number one, you can get rid of term limits, but the legislature is not going to do that for all kinds of political reasons. until at least 2010 or 2011. I'm not sure how Tim Skupik, who is a columnist report in the Press and Guide on a weekly basis, he thinks the legislature is just not going to act on that. So, but we, the people, some group or groups could start a drive to eliminate term limits. And in the spirit and memory of Mayor Michael A. Guido, he was totally against term limits, obviously because he wanted to stay in office even longer than he had, and not have to worry about that himself. But more than that, he's right. We already have term limits, it's called elections. If you keep informed, read the local papers, and you keep voting, you can vote out those people that aren't doing the job. It is just that easy, which isn't easy, I know, but it's your responsibility, I think, as a citizen. But we can start a petition to get rid of term limits. And I think that now after this terrible crisis this year, enough people might sign a petition, and it might be on the ballot for next November. But who's going to start it? The legislature is not going to start to put that on the ballot for whatever self-interest reasons. Number two, what about a part-time legislature? That'll show them. Apparently the people aren't doing the job full-time. Then make them only, and they only meet three times a week anyway.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So, and then that might mean cutting back on the pay, although we need the best people. We need, you know, lawyers, doctors, whoever knowledgeable to become legislators and do that job too. And so, have to give up a lot of money if they don't have a decent pay. And then an idea I have, and I haven't researched it recently, I think it's worthy to consider a unicameral legislature. And there's nothing undemocratic about it. I believe the state of Kansas or Nebraska is unicameral. You don't have the House of Representatives and the Senate. You have a single body to negotiate and debate, and then it goes to the governor. Okay, and that can speed up legislation.
I think that's a better idea.
It can prevent a lot of the divisiveness, too. So one body's not saying, well, we can't. If we pass it, what's the good? They're going to vote it down in the Senate. So you don't have the bickering between the two parties, like Republicans control the Senate and the Democrats control the House. You don't have that problem. These are just things to consider. No one else other than myself has suggested looking into a unicameral legislature, but it would certainly save the state a lot of money, but you still have full-time people, but you wouldn't have the obvious conflicts. I think there's still plenty of checks and balances on a unicameral legislature. It has not been a problem in wherever it is, Kansas or Nebraska, where it's been in place for many, many years. So I don't know that that'll resolve our problem. We have economic problems that are unique to Michigan, and that's why there's such a dilemma. Even if we had no term limits and part-time legislature or unicameral on top of it, you got to come up with some answers and some problems. So you've got to be proactive, but you got to be smart. And in other states where they have high employment rates and they got good economic community already, you don't really have a problem. Just keep spending money and you don't have a crisis you have to solve. But there's always some tweaking to do. But here in Michigan, we got more than tweaking. We got to get some new directions and some plans from very good people and get them going. So
I'm not in favor of getting rid of term limits, because if they continue to fail to meet deadlines and resolve the problems, why keep them in there? That's my point.
Yeah, and highly stressed jobs that really tax a person, like being president of the United States, two terms, 8 years, that's probably desirable there. I know it was the death of FDR when he was entering his fourth term, Franklin D. Roosevelt, in the 1940s, and his health was sorely taxed. Of course, he went through World War II as our leader.
Yeah, but that's a personal decision somebody would have to make.
Yeah, but we don't necessarily want to consider, as they did consider and reject in Colombia, making someone more or less dictator for life or chancellor for life, as Hitler had. It's perhaps, looking at world history, perhaps not the thing to do to allow one person the right to continue, even with popular support, as long as they want to. I think it's good in Russia that Vladimir Putin, his party got 92% of the vote in the last election, but he's term limited. Now they think they'll magically create a new position, that didn't exist on top of the presidency so that he can be folded into that for life maybe, but I don't think that's a good idea. Even if he's popular, and he has been very dictatorial in terms of the TV stations, the media, and so on, I don't think that's a good deal at the top of the federal government to have somebody able to stay there forever, even if they're popular. I think there's probably a lot of other really good people that should get a chance and offer some new suggestions. Anyway, things to consider, and you can't sit back and do that. If there is a petition drive starting somewhere, we'll try to let you know if we know about it, and maybe you want to consider adding your signature to it. Maybe that will help the situation. Others, Democrats and Republicans, have suggested that these changes might help out in the future around here. So what else do we have?
Well, I got a very big surprise. When I looked at the Detroit News from yesterday, and I read on the front page, there's an article, and it says driver's license in Michigan may get an upgrade. And
again,
yeah, that's a good point. And it says
the license plates just got one.
Yeah. And it says here that reacting to pressure from the federal government over terrorism concerns, legislators and Secretary of State Terry Lynn Land are putting on the fast track a plan to upgrade driver's licenses to keep them out of the hands of illegal immigrants in Michigan. I'm like, really? Oh, wow.
Okay, just out of curiosity, how did they get them in the first place?
Well, here's the point. It's a new plan, and everybody who's a Michigan resident would have to get a new driver's license. We have to get a new driver's license, and guess what? It's going to cost more money.
If you have the appropriate paperwork, and it's not falsified, which supposedly the people are trained to identify to identify the falsification of documents as they review them, this shouldn't even be an issue.
Well, it says here...
It means somebody's not doing their job.
It says here, I agree.
Yeah.
It would be a two-tiered plan, and it would require an upgraded standard license or ID card. It would allow holders to travel on domestic flights without needing a passport. They would be only available to Michigan residents who are legally living in the United States and would cost more than current licenses. And then they would offer an optional so-called enhanced license or ID card that would allow travel to Canada or anywhere else in the Western Hemisphere without a passport, and it would be available to U.S. citizens only. I don't understand why we need this. I'm just like Krista.
Well,
why do we need this?
It's the processing time required to get a passport right now. They're really backed up because of the new regulations that have to do with travel to Canada. It might take months and months to get it, but apparently they believe that the Secretary of State in Michigan could get this sort of dual purpose document out faster to the people that in Michigan, who of course would be traveling more likely to Canada. I mean, it's right over there. They're wonderful. When I was a kid, like even 10 years ago, we had free and unfettered, just show your driver's license if you needed to. They usually took your word for it. And you can eat, be entertained, go back and forth, go to their shopping centers, whatever. Nice, friendly people over there and over here, too, of course. And what's the problem?
We've got that
travel issue that if you don't have the passport, certainly, if you're going to go to Toronto, you better have that. If you're going to go deeper into Canada, or for more than a day, you better have a passport. The driver's license may be okay, but they might pull you aside and ask you more questions and would slow you down at the border.
Yes, but Jay, this time last year, we were told all over the media that everybody had to get a passport to go to Canada. That's what we were told. And people were rushing to get their passports to go to Canada and Mexico and all of that. And that was my understanding of how it was going to be, that you had to have a passport to travel in or out of the country. Now, I think this is just about money, because it says the additional money is needed to finance verification of documents and new technology to add security threads threads, not threats, and holograms to make the licenses tamper-resistant and difficult to counterfeit.
Well, and maybe the state will make a profit on this. Maybe they won't. In setting it up, it's always going to be more expensive than they think, and this takes some high technology. To make it a quick, responsive system that is also secure is going to cost them more than they think. So I just get the federal government to get going on their passports.
That's ridiculous.
You know,
that's
there should
ridiculous.
Only be one document for international travel. It should come from the federal government, and they do need to speed up their processing. There's no doubt about that.
The only people who end up paying for this are the people who already follow the policies and the rules.
Thank you.
They're the ones that always end up. Everyone else who falsifies documents, who gets these fake IDs, I'm sorry, they're just going to learn how to do the new one. They're just going to get the same equipment. There will always be that effect. You need to be more, they need to be more aware of the documents that are already coming in and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And passports, okay, let's be consistent here. Okay, just stick with the passports. If you want to do that, like you were just saying, Jay, improve the passport facilities.
Well, they're talking about completely getting rid
there.
Of the passport. They're saying that the driver's license and the ID card.
Well, that would just be for Canada, though, and the Western Hemisphere.
Well, okay. But anyway, related to the Real ID Act, too. And it said the Bush administration has provided no guidelines for the Real ID
Act. Well, there's a surprise.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal at its new time of 1 to 2 p.m. on Fridays. And this show is being recorded on our WHFR server, our big computer system, and it will be available on our website for listening again if you didn't get all the info, or if you're not able to ever listen from 1 to 2 in the future. You can always catch it anytime during the week. And for about 6 to 12 weeks back, that's scary. They still have it archived, even when it was on 10 to 11, if you want to take notes and so on. From our website, whfr.fm, www.whfr.fm. Click on the WHFR Journal link, and you can either listen to the stream, I believe, from the last show, or you can get a podcast, which is a download of an MP3 file of the show. So check that out. We'll be right back after these non-commercial messages.
I'm Alec Baldwin. Like any parent, I worry about the health of our nation's children. Never before have so many American kids been overweight and at risk for diabetes, heart disease, and other serious health problems. The good news is that the right foods can help our kids stay healthy. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and other low-fat vegetarian foods will protect your kids as they grow and keep the whole family healthy at the same time. For a free booklet packed with delicious recipes and nutrition tips, call 1-877-685-KIDS or visit www.kidsgethealthy.org. PCRM is a nonprofit organization of doctors and laypersons working together to promote preventive medicine, especially good nutrition, and more ethical research.
Did you know you can take university-approved courses at Henry Ford Community College and save $20,000 or more? That's right. HFCC courses are guaranteed to transfer, and they cost less. Compare tuition rates of over 20 colleges and universities at hfcc.edu and check out the savings. Just think, you'll get 2 years of university-quality courses and still have money to pay for the next 2 years. Learn more at hfcc.edu or call 1-800-585-HFCC.
That's the theme song for Highway 61, our wonderful blues show every Friday from 2 to 6 p.m. Coming up right after the new time here for the new WHFR Journal. And that will be Joanne Korchinska heading up that blues cruise here. A lot of local artists, great blues artists, and they haven't changed that time on Fridays. And she's got a couple of great ticket giveaways. Yep, if you happen to be listening, there's some great blues artists. They're going to be performing the next week or so, and she'll give you information about the place and the artist and play some of their music for you. You may not have heard of their names, but they're really good. And these are great tickets, I think. And sometime during the 4 hours, there'll be a chance to call in and maybe win a pair of tickets to one or the other of these. And as I said, two different ticket giveaways coming up this afternoon. Stay tuned for that at 2 o'clock sharp with Joanne Korchinska right after the new time period for the new WHFR Journal, which continues right now. Susan Morrell with me, Kristen Risbeck, had to slide away, scoot out of the studio. Was it something we said? I don't think so. No.
She's a very busy person.
Yeah, she's very busy, and we thank her for coming by. Another one of our great volunteer staff, and makes WHFR.FM, independent non-commercial station, possible in this community and for anyone listening online to WHFR.FM, too. You can listen to our live stream there anytime, day or night. Susan, tell us about the Michigan presidential primary. It is going to happen, it seems, January 15th.
Well,
she doesn't have the paper in her hand.
I need the paper. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, the article I see here in front of me does say that, of course, finally our Supreme Court took the Supreme Court in Michigan to actually finally decide that it will happen. There were challenges about whether or not it was fair, whether or not that much money could be spent. And okay, I don't think it should have been. It's something like $17 million. And the reason I didn't think it should be spent is because it just gives extra advertisement to the Democrats and Republicans. And you may not be aware out there, folks, but there's more than two political parties, and in fact, you don't need to be in a political party to run for office. Did you know that? It's not in the Constitution. It's not a requirement anywhere, and it shouldn't be, that you have to be part of a political party to run for office. You could be an independent, or you could be a party of one, if you will, if you have to have a party. The big party, you know. I promise we'll have a big party as soon as I'm elected. So whatever, you don't have to be, and there's nothing bad about having multiple political parties, even though my civics teacher in the eighth grade said there was. Oh, we're a two-party system, and that's the only thing that can work. And look at all the bad things. I can point out a lot of wonderful countries, Canada, and other countries of the world that are getting along just fine, better than we are, in fact. Look at that Canadian dollar. With multiple political parties or multiple candidates running for office. And to me, a political primary should be open to every party, and therefore every party, if it's got, or every candidate, should have a chance to check out voter interest, I think. And I think it's unfair for the Dems and Republicans to spend state money to just promote themselves and their variety of candidates as if they're the only choice. And I blame all media, all the newspapers, all the radio stations for not getting the message out that this is like a closed shop, and especially Republicans. And there's an editorial in one of our local papers today about, ooh, workers should have the right to either be in a union or not, you know, closing down various facilities to anyone who doesn't want to join. Well, it's not the American tradition. Well, we've closed our elections, effectively, and they've been closed by whom? By the Dems and the Republicans, who don't want competition. They don't want to let people know there's other ideas out there. No, it's not just liberal and conservative. There's a couple of political parties and candidates, and myself included, although I'm not a candidate, that believes that the best answers come from a variety of so-called political perspectives. I think the best answers for some things are extremely conservative answers, and in other cases, extremely liberal progressive answers. And it's been proven. And anyone that can't see that the best answers don't necessarily just come from one philosophy, I think is badly mistaken. I think you ought to do your research. And in fact, Gary Warnichek was here, who, of course, he switched from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party in the after he left the legislature. Now he's a Wayne County Commissioner, a Democrat. And he admitted to me that, you know, political theory is fine and wonderful, but the problems are a lot more complicated, and you need to have a wider perspective, because sometimes you need to do things that might be called conservative and other times things that are liberal. In fact, the Libertarian Party is not a plug for them, but they see themselves as a mixture of ideas from the left and the right. Although a lot of people think, oh, it's just those far right-wing Republicans that are libertarians. Totally wrong. Libertarian Party has a lot of people that formerly were Democrats in it. Why? Because they believe that their spin on political theory encompasses things that are liberal sometimes, things that are conservative. But they have higher principles that go beyond simple liberal and conservative. And I think the Green Party would agree, too. In fact, anybody talking about the Green Party, if you're talking about ecology, gee, we want a safe environment, don't we? We need healthy toys and a healthy environment, less dependence on foreign oil, which is only a very polluting and limited energy source. We need all kinds of things that are not things to be done that are not Democrat and Republican. The Green Party understands that, even though most of their answers, I have to say, are liberal progressive. They think those answers are the best for getting those problems solved, and I don't necessarily feel that's true, and certainly other people don't either. But nonetheless, we have to break down those barriers. But if you do want to vote in the primary, they actually put a notice in the paper.
I still am looking for that notice.
Well, there it is.
Where is it? Oh, okay. The wrong one is circled. Pardon me.
Yeah,
okay,
Kristen circled the wrong one before she left.
This is in the Dearborn Press and Guide, and it says, notice of the last day to register to vote for the January 15th, 2008 election to the qualified electors of the City of Dearborn, County of Wayne County, and State of Michigan. And the last day, will be Monday. Notice. Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. At the city clerk's office.
Whatever
Michigan
city you're in, but this is the Dearborn one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Monday, December 17th, 2007 will be the last day to register to vote.
Yeah, because the 15th of December falls on a Saturday, apparently. They're giving you through the end of the day on Monday, December 17th, at your city clerk's office, wherever, or you can go to the Secretary of State's office, too, and register to vote. If you're not registered, you can't vote. If you keep voting after you're registered, you never have to register again. So, unless you change, of course, your residency to another city.
And then the presidential primary election will be held on Tuesday, January 15th, 2008, mm-hmm. from 7 o'clock in the morning until 8 p.m. in the evening, at which we can vote for presidential candidates for the Republican Party and for the Democratic Party. I don't see a third party here.
No, there won't be. No, this was set up and passed by law by our friendly Democrats and Republicans in the legislature. There is no place for a choice within any other political party. And you might say, well, they don't have a lot of choice. They don't have a lot of people in those parties. Well, sure, they could. If they had an equal chance to get into the primaries, they might consider doing that. And therefore, they would get more publicity for their candidates and their party. And, of course, the Dems and Republicans don't want anybody else finding out, just in case they might have a better idea.
Right.
And that's not... Well, it's just not the way our system should be, and that's it. Now, I should also mention that you have to declare yourself, or at least you have to choose which primary you want to vote in. One of the issues were that after you have voted as a Dem or Republican, will that information be made known to that party?
Okay,
which side you're on?
Yes. I have a question. Mm-hmm. If you register as an independent, are you allowed to vote in either the Republican or the Democratic?
Well, Michigan doesn't require you to identify yourself ongoing, but for the primary, you have to choose whether you're going to vote on the Republican side or the Democratic side. So in a way, you're saying, I'm more interested in or more concerned about the Democrats than the Republicans if you vote on the Democratic side. But we don't have that sort of ongoing registration as Dem or Republican or Independent. And that's why it was a concern here to see whether or not the side that you chose, not your vote, not how you voted, but the side that you chose to vote in, that was part of the law that they had passed originally, that you had, that information could be made available, like for fundraising or phone calls later. And
what if you want to change at the last minute?
Well, we don't require that for the main election, but it's just when you arrive at the poll, you'll have to say you want to vote on the Democratic side or the Republican side.
Okay.
So
very good.
It's fairly safe. But, of course, what that engenders is that, you know, cross-party voting is that a Democrat could, it's mean-spirited, it's negative, and I'm not in favor of that ever, but a Dem could go and vote for the weakest, the perceived weakest Republican candidate, so that if they were selected, they'd be easy to beat in the general election.
Well, I guess I don't think like that, but
No, I'm not recommending that, but I'm saying that that is a problem with our system, is that there is a percentage, it's low, thank goodness, that they've discovered that people do that mean-spirited voting. In other words, all Democrats are good, but I'm going to vote for the poorest Republican candidate, the one that we could beat the most easily and hope that they win.
Well, that is a good point, but it's not, I don't think
we can't do anything about that.
It's not honest.
No, it is a problem with every primary. So I personally don't see the need for political primaries. I'm sorry, folks, I don't see the need for that at all. If they're running as part of a party, let the party decide in their own private caucuses, the people who are members, card-carrying members of that party, let them decide within their own system who their strongest candidate will be. Shouldn't they know? Why would the public have to be brought in who don't really know these people as well?
Well, that's true.
And if you're an independent, you say, well, I don't have a party, I don't have a caucus. Just get the number of signatures you need and get on the ballot. Okay? I don't see a problem with that. And the way we have the presidential primaries and the cost involved that go on for years in advance of the general election is crazy for all kinds of reasons.
It's very crazy. Very crazy.
And I don't want to go into the reasons here. But if you want to be part of this, folks, even though the Democratic Party has said we won't give any credence to the votes that you cast, and so, you know, your candidate, even though you voted for him, and maybe they won the Michigan primary and the Democratic Republican side, those votes won't dictate how the Michigan electors that go to the national conventions will vote. They won't have any effect. But we, state of Michigan, is hoping, especially the Democrats, that they'll reconsider, their party will reconsider and actually use the outcome of the election as the way to guarantee, to force the votes of the Michigan electors, at least on the first ballot at the national convention. But at this point, your vote doesn't mean a darn thing, other than it'll be publicized who won, but it won't mean anything in terms of how the Democratic electors will be forced to vote when they get to the national election.
Well, Jay, can I change the subject for a moment?
No, not for a moment. I heard a good proposal today, though, on National Public Radio, and it's something for the public to consider, is that there is someone in the federal government, some representative from Minnesota or Iowa or somewhere, that he wants to set up a system whereby there'll be regional primaries on the same dates, you know, like the Northeast, New England states all have something in common. All those states should have their primary on the same day. Midwest, all of them on the same day. And which goes first? There would be a lottery to decide each time which region will go first. That will take care of all of this little fudging. Every state wants to be first. But New Hampshire doesn't represent the whole country. But then again, they should get some attention every now and then. Obviously, New Hampshire and Iowa are against the proposal because they wouldn't have the spotlight constantly in the future. But it would straighten out all this dickering. And if you love the idea of a presidential primary, and I have my doubts whether or not it's needed, this sort of rational regional primary proposal with lotteries choosing which region goes first and second and so on would make total sense and take care of all this mess of issues. And so I just want people to think about that. It just came up today. I just heard about it being proposed by a representative in the federal government. Won't take effect this year. It's too late for that. But maybe in the future we might get some sense in this whole primary elector struggle.
Yes, and I want to go back to the topic you've mentioned about the environment. And in reading the papers yesterday, I came across at least four different articles from the Detroit News, the Free Press, and USA Today on the environment and what things are happening with our legislators in Michigan and elsewhere. It says here, in Lansing, the Michigan legislators moved a step closer to enacting a measure that would prevent states outside the region from raiding the area's most valuable resource, the Great Lakes. And the agreement would be called the Great Lakes St. Lawrence River Basin Water Resources Compact. And it's legislation that's being proposed by all eight of the Great Lakes states. And it would put authority over water diversions in the hands of those states. And it's important to ensure the sustainable use of the Great Lakes waters in the future. And I don't know if you watched the presidential debates and you've heard much about New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, but he has targeted the Great Lakes region. And this is what he has said. He says he wants, as a president, a national water policy. He says we need a dialogue between states to deal with issues like water conservation, water reuse technology, water delivery, and water production. He says states like Wisconsin are awash in water. Mm-hmm. That's because he has no water in New Mexico.
Right, yes.
So
yeah, they've had water rationing in like Santa Fe and Albuquerque for years. And not just at special times of the year, all the time. There's a limitation on how many times a day you should be flushing your toilet and so on. I mean, it's a very serious problem for the Southwest, all the southwestern states. Michigan is a great place to be, although I just heard, and we've been hearing this for the last couple of years, that the boats using the Great Lakes for commercial transport of, minerals and other products, that they have to lighten their load now because the lakes are many inches lower each year, that there is the warm weather, global warming, whatever you want to call it, the cycle of the planet. There is much less water here than there was before. That's a cautionary note, folks. We definitely should not be allowing major, like, aqueducts or piping or tubing to get the Great Lakes down to the Southwest or even to Illinois or some other place closer by. We need that water. And if people want to be in a place that's got a lot of water, why don't they move there? Huh? We could use some more residents here in Michigan, and it is a great state, and we got water. Yes. Doesn't mean we should totally forget those in need. We can ship them for a small fee, some water to Arizona if they need it. And I'm not trying to be selfish, but there's only so much fresh water in this country, and because of climate change, whether we caused it or not, that water supply is getting more and more precious. I'm not saying we'll be out of water soon, but thank goodness we're living in Michigan. But we should not do something crazy like let them build a pipeline or something to other places in the U.S. There's not enough water to do that, and our supply is going down each year, too, even though we've got the largest single mass of fresh water in the whole United States.
So we must maintain control of our water resources here in the state of Michigan and surrounding states. And here's another information. This is from the Detroit Free Press, and it says the energy bill vote was pushed back. and they're going to vote on that today. It says congressional Democratic leaders push back the vote on an energy bill with a historic increase in fuel economy standards to 35 miles per gallon by 2020 for all vehicles. In the face of growing opposition from Senate Republicans, President George W. Bush, and even some Democrats, and Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker, Democrat from California, favors an energy bill that the Bush administration says may elicit a veto. As outlined by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the bill would include new requirements for renewable fuels, the elimination of a $21 billion tax break to oil companies and other sources of revenue, and requires electric utilities to generate 15% of their energy from renewable sources by 2020. Mm-hmm. So at least they're on the issue. They're trying to move forward on this issue. I think that's very, very important. But really, we should be getting 35 miles per gallon right now, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we were told in an interview that you set up, and we did with the representative spokesperson from the Union of Concerned Scientists, which is a great nonprofit group, folks, a great lobbyist group, because it's full of smart people that do the research. Okay, imagine they actually get the real facts. They know science, and they look at the numbers, and they understand them. Okay, and they said, hey, the technology is there. The auto industry could do that. Oh, it's going to cost them a little bit, but duh. Hey, gee, the Japanese, the foreign car makers are already there, so maybe their corporate bosses need a little encouragement to get started down that road. It's good for all of us, yes. That bill, I think it has, or it certainly will, pass the House. Frank Bewick, 30-plus-1 column in the Times-Herald newspapers, he does state again in last Wednesday, December 5th edition, he said in this, we have the elected official who is good for us 99% of the time. Such a man is our Congressman John D. Dingell. Now, John and I don't always agree on everything, Frank Bewick says. In fact, I think that his party, the Democratic Party, is off base on a number of items. Of course, the Republicans are not batting even 500 in my book either, so that's not good then, is it? But John's announcement of the 50-cent hike in gasoline taxes has the best interest of our country in mind, I think, but he and I part company on this. I think that there are better ways to serve our economy and our energy, and it's good to have this debate. That's democracy in action, to hear the variety of ideas, and then, as you know, you only have so much time, though, folks, to make a decision before a crisis may come up. At some point, leadership has to make a decision. We have to start doing something.
And, Jay, there's this article on global warming, and another one in the Detroit Free Press, and the headline says, global warming wreaks havoc on thousands of animals. It says more than 3,500 gray-headed and black flying foxes. I've never heard of that animal. But you know what they are? They're huge bats. They're gigantic bats, and they died in 2002 after temperatures rose above 107 degrees Fahrenheit in New South Wales, which is Australia. And it says that globally 30% of Earth's species could disappear if temperatures rise only 4.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and we could lose up to 70% if they rise only 6.3 degrees Fahrenheit, says the UN Network of Concerned Scientists. I mean, this is a catastrophe in the making. Butterflies are disappearing. Polar bears and penguins are watching their habitat melt away. I mean, it's very sad. I saw a polar bear starving to death on the Animal Planet, just skin and bone from loss of habitat, not enough food on the Animal Planet. It's very sad.
Yeah, that report didn't get enough coverage in the press. The New York Times had it on page 5 or 6, but it was not the Union of Concerned Scientists, but the United Nations, and a scientific panel from all around the world, objective, not political, not Dem, Republican, U.S. or Russia, just the group, and the conclusion is things are getting a lot worse. And so that is the buzzer, that you know what that means. Yes, the show is coming to an end, folks, and Joanne Kraczynska is on her way in for Highway 61. We're saved by the bell, if you
yes,
will,
we
Susan.
Yes, we were. Yes, we were.
I wanted to mention just something real quick. The Dearborn Heights people, if you still got yard waste out there, if the snow hits you too early, but you've got it in barrels or buckets, or you still want to do some raking, their yard waste collection is extended to December 14th. Now, the city of Dearborn said they might extend it, but then they pulled back on that press release last week. They had a supplement that said, no, don't promise that. We don't know. I've still got leaves piled up like crazy outside of my house that haven't been collected for 3 weeks. So where's the city of Dearborn and our great services there? Don't they scoop them up if the weather's below freezing? What's going on? So I trust the city of Dearborn will do the right thing, and they'll get out there as soon as they can with their scoops and their ice melting devices if needed to get the yard waste up. But you still have time officially in Dearborn Heights through December 14th. And finally, I do want to thank, besides Susan Morrell and Kristen Risbeck, for coming in and being here. I didn't know.